Last time we were together, we looked at verse 1. It came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month Ziph, which is the second month that he began to build the house of the Lord. That puts the Exodus at 1447 B.C., in case you were wondering. Verse 2, and the house which King Solomon built for the Lord, the length thereof was 80 cubits, and the breadth thereof 20 cubits, and the height thereof 30 cubits. A cubit is anywhere, I've heard it is like 17 inches up to 22 and a half inches. Arguably, it's 18 inches. And I like 18 because that's a foot and a half, and that makes the math easy. So when it says the length thereof was 80 cubits, so if it's 60 units of 18, that makes it 90 feet. Okay? Easy math. The breadth thereof, 20 cubits, that means it's 30 feet. And the height thereof, 30 cubits, that means it's 45 feet tall. You say, so what is that? Well, I was measuring, because I had tape measure, and I was wondering if the temple, could fit inside of this building. Well, it can, width-wise, and we have like 2 feet on each side, okay? The width. The length, if we use the back of the platform here, it's going to be out in the foyer about 10 or 12 feet. I didn't get it exactly, of course, right? And 45 feet up, well, we're going to have to take the roof off, okay? So it's going to be cold. Remember that night it was cold? It'll be colder. No roof, that equals cold. But we won't do that tonight, okay? Just for the... I'm just giving you an idea how big it is. It's not a huge building. We're not talking the U.S. Pentagon. We're not talking about, the Taj Mahal even. We're talking about it's small and it's opulent, but it's a slaughterhouse. Remember, most of the offerings are done out in the courtyard, if you would call it that. But that's what it is. It's for sacrifice. Blood was brought into the Holy of Holies once a year, inside the holy place where, and we'll go over some of the furnishings and things of this nature. There's the holy place in this most, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. And the house which King Solomon built for the Lord, I read verse 2, and the porch before the temple of the house, 20 cubits was the length thereof according to the breadth of the house, 10 cubits was the breadth thereof before the house. For the house he made windows of narrow lights. What does that mean? I have no idea. We all get the same description, and then you get an artist's conception. You can get on YouTube and you can see somebody built a life-size tabernacle because they had a lot of time on their hands and they want to see what that looked like. Or they built a model of the temple. You wouldn't build an actual temple. You could out of wood, out of cedar. You couldn't gold plate it. That would be... if they found all the gold, this gold, it would throw the world's money resources into chaos. There would be suddenly so much influx of wealth that it would be incredible. So we're talking about a lot of gold. So we have things like, if the house he made windows of narrow lights, and whatever that means, you have to figure that out. Not lights like these lights, like narrow lights, because they didn't have electricity, obviously. They windows so they could have some sun coming in so they could see what was going on. Well, they had the menorah, and that's the menorahs, and that's what gave them light. And against the wall of the house he built chambers round about, against the walls of the house round about, both of the temple and of the oracle. The oracle here is the Holy of Holies. And he made chambers round about. The nethermost chamber was 5 cubits broad, and the middle was 6 cubits broad, and the third was 7 cubits broad. For within, without in the wall of the house, he made narrow rests round about, that the beams should not be fastened in the walls of the house. I don't know. And the house, when it was in building, was built of stone, made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in building. So they quarried the stones and cut them off-site, brought them, transported them, however, don't ask me, and then they put them into place perfectly. I think sometimes people were smarter before. Oh, they didn't have the technology, but they had some know-how that I know how projects go together, big with cranes and big motors and incredible, you know, hydraulics, and I've seen incredible things being built. But craftsmanship at this level, no, I don't know anything about that. The door for the middle chamber was in the right side of the house, and they went up with winding stairs in the middle chamber and out of the middle into the third. So he built the house and finished it and covered the house with beams and boards of cedar. So you got it's parts of it is hewn stone, parts of it are cedar, and I think it's all overlaid with gold. He built chambers against all the house, 5 cubits high, and they rested on the house with timber of cedar. And the word of the Lord came to Solomon, saying, the inside anyway, I should say, is covered with gold. The word of the Lord came to Solomon, saying, concerning this house which thou art in building, if thou wilt walk in my statutes and execute my judgments and keep all my commandments to walk in them, then will I perform my word which with thee, which I spake unto David thy father, and I will dwell among the children of Israel, will not forsake my people Israel. So Solomon built the house and finished it. Incredible. What can we take away from here? Why was it quarried off site and then brought in? What was that all about? You know, you couldn't hear anything. You know, if you had somebody building across from you, or especially a construction project, you know, they're putting a new medical center or something like that, 7 o'clock, you know, every morning, you know, you start hearing all the power tools come on and the, you know, all the alarms for the backup alarms for all the backhoes and all. It's quite noisy. Here, the stone's being quarried and everything, it didn't make any noise, but you could see the progress. But why was it built off-site? And then he brought the stones on. So there's some literature, there's some writing on that, that the ancients said, you know, iron, you know, shortens life. And they meant, well, like weapons, you know, you build, you know, swords and stuff and spears out of iron, and it's guaranteed to shorten your life. But this house was to lengthen your life, and to put them together like that wouldn't be a good idea. So they hewed everything away from the building of the house, brought it. And I know nothing of that. And of course, Scripture doesn't say, oh, when you build it, you know, make sure. Were there noise restrictions in Jerusalem at the time? You think, why? There was no worship going on. There wasn't a temple or anything. Now there is, of course, you know. I mean, at the time of the building. And in the middle of it all, God shows up and says to Solomon, the word of the Lord came to Solomon saying, so did he, was there another dream involved? Again, there's no prophet around Solomon, which I find very concerning. But he does have his priests, and he's a man of faith, apparently, at this point. So Solomon built the house and finished it. So he was diligent. And Solomon's a builder. You can read that in Ecclesiastes. Oh, he was a builder. He built the walls of the house therein with boards of cedar, both the floor of the house and the walls of the ceiling. He covered them on the inside with wood and covered the floor of the house with planks of fir. And he built 20 cubits on the sides of the house, both the floor and the walls with boards of cedar. He built them for it within, even for the oracle. Again, that's the Holy of Holies. Even for the most holy place. See, that's where we know that the oracle is the most holy place. And the house, that is, the temple before it, was 40 cubits long. And the cedar of the house within was carved with knops and open flowers, all with cedar. There was no stone seen. Knops there are gourds, you know, think pomegranates or I don't know. You know, you see these decorative squash you couldn't eat. I don't think you can eat them. And you buy them and they're just for fall decorations and stuff like that. Think in terms of something like that. So it's decorative. It's pleasing to the eye. God wanted it. It's a slaughterhouse. And God wanted it to be beautiful also. And the oracle, he prepared in the house within to set there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Again, that's how we know the oracle is the Holy of Holies. The Ark of the Covenant goes in the Holy of Holies. What else? The Ark of the Covenant, as far as furniture. What? No. That's in the holy place. The mercy seat. And everyone thinks of that as one, like, it in effect, it covers the ark, but they're always spoken of separate as two pieces of furniture. The ark and the mercy seat. And we know that from the building of the tabernacle. There are some similarities and there are some differences. Jesus is compared to the tabernacle. He's made flesh and he dwelt among us, John chapter 1. No, he tabernacled among us is the word. And he's compared to the tabernacle in many scriptures. Not the temple, though. Even though there's similarity between the temple and the tabernacle, Jesus is never called the temple. So what's the temple symbolic of? Yes, the church, us. Seven times in the New Testament. Now, it doesn't say seven times, you are the temple of the Lord. It says, you know, talks about like living stones that build the house and, you know, things like that. You have to put them all together into seven that talk about, you know, us being the dwelling place of God. And several verses say, you are the temple of God. Singularly and corporately. You individually are the temple of God. We collectively are the temple of God. What know ye not that your body is the temple? And it goes on like that. Like I say, seven times to no one's surprise. I have no idea where I was. Okay, knots in verse 18, oracle verse 19. Verse 20, and the oracle in the forepart was 20 cubits in length and 20 cubits in breadth and 20 cubits in the height thereof. And he overlaid it with pure gold and so covered the altar, which was of cedar. 20 cubits, again, that's 30 feet by 30 feet by 30 feet. It's a cube. I was just thinking, if the house is 45 feet, what's above that? There's like a 15-foot space above the Holy of Holies that's, I don't know. Like if you're in the holy place, you go into the hole, you can see the roof of it, but there's an empty space. I don't know. I don't know. I was just thinking of that because as we were reading earlier, it was 45. I said, wait a second, that... Because I always pictured it like as a cube within a, like a rectangle, all the same height, but they're not the same height, obviously. Again, I think if somebody built a model of this would help. We watched a show the other night, but it was talking about the temple, the Ezekiel's temple. And that is a remarkable, altogether different. Okay, so Solomon overlaid the house within with pure gold, and he made a partition by the chains of gold before the oracle, and he overlaid it with gold. The whole house he overlaid with gold. There's a lot of gold here. I think about just this, again, this, think about this floor here, 44 feet wide. It was just 40 feet wide, and just like, just think of just this floor here, this cement, lovely cement that we paint every year. Next time, we're not going to paint anymore. We're just going to cover it with gold. Ouch, how much money would that be? How much opulence? How much? And then, of course, we couldn't because people come in and steal the floor, you know. And, you know, you couldn't put down enough security. You'd have to, you know, have machine guns here around the place all the time. But just think about the opulence. Oh, he overlaid it with gold. Oh, he overlaid it with gold. How much gold? How paper thin was that gold? It's still a lot of gold, right? I don't know. And the whole house he overlaid with gold until he had finished all the house. Also the whole altar was that was by the oracle he overlaid with gold. And within the oracle he made two cherubims of olive tree, each 10 cubits high. The cherubim, all through Scripture, are indicative of the presence of God. Did God dwell in this temple? Yes. Yes. The Shekinah glory came in and dwelt in Solomon's temple. Yes. What about the later temple? This temple was destroyed. What about the later temple? Did the glory of God reside there? That's your homework question. And 5 cubits, verse 24, and 5 cubits was the one wing of the cherub, and 5 cubits the other wing of the cherub. From the uttermost part of the one wing unto the uttermost part of the other were 10 cubits. And the other cherub was 10 cubits. Both the cherubims were of one measure and one size. The height of the one cherub was 10 cubits, and so it was of the other cherub. And he set the cherubims. Cherubims is wrong, by the way. It's cherubim. It's already plural. Cherubims is pluraling a plural. It's when somebody changed it to English. If you want it, cherubs. That's okay, but that eem on the end, that pluralizes some nouns. Like El, God, right? Elohim, gods. In the beginning, gods created the heaven and the earth. Interesting. And we know that there's only one God, of course. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. Even the first verse of the Bible hints at the Trinity. Verse 27, he set the cherubims above within the inner house, and they stretched forth the wings of the cherubim, so the wing of the one touched the one wall, the wing of the other cherub touched the other wall, and their wings touched one another in the midst of the house. And he overlaid the cherubims with gold, and he carved all the walls of the house round about with carved figures of cherubims and palm trees and open flowers within and without. And the floor of the house he overlaid with gold within and without. And for the entering of the oracle, he made doors of olive tree. The lintel and the side post were a fifth part of the wall. The two doors also were of olive tree, and he carved upon them carvings of cherubims and palm trees and open flowers, and overlaid them with gold and spread gold upon the cherubims and upon the palm trees. So it's highly decorated and all in gold. So also he made for the door of the temple posts of olive tree, a fourth part of the wall. The two doors were fir tree. The two leaves of the one door were folding, and the two leaves of the other door were folding. And he carved thereon the cherubims and palm trees and open flowers, and covered them with gold fitted upon the carved work. And he built the inner court with three rows of hewed stones and a row of cedar beams. In the fourth year was the foundation of the house of the Lord laid in the month Ziph, April, May, okay? It's the second month. In the 11th year, in the month Bul, which is the 8th month, was the house finished throughout all the parts thereof, and according to all the fashion of it, so he was 7 years in building it, the house proper. Take away the foundation, all the everything. The house, 7 years. Quite a project. I don't know that I've been on a project that lasted more than really a year. And we built the biggest solar field this side of the Mississippi in a year. You know what I mean? Of course, it didn't have that much detail, and we weren't carving cherubim and palm trees. But, you know, big project, couple of years, you know. 7 years to do a room that would fit inside of the footprint would fit inside of our church. Wow. There's a lot to it. But, chapter 7, verse 1, but Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished all his house. Now, what are we instructed here? Okay, it took him, he started at the same time. It took him 4 extra years because he was building the Lord's house first. And he had all his people and all his crafts and all dedicated to that, right? Or he was so fussy with his own house, it took 13 years. I don't know exactly what's being said here. And there's debate on the subject. Is the Holy Spirit showing us that his heart is already wandering a little? He's more worried about his own opulence and his own footprint than the house of the Lord. He's more concerned. Because I don't think David took 13 years to build his palace, and probably he's off fighting and said, hey, when I come back, can you have something so I can live in, you know? You know what I mean? It seems like he's less concerned with things like that. Now, Solomon's a builder, and I think that can be a really good thing, you know, but it can also be a real... What is that verse saying to you? I know what it says to me, you know. He had, you know, troops and legions building the house of God, and he had a few craftsmen building his house. I don't know. Or, once the temple was finished, he hired all them guys to build his house, and it took 13 years. All right, you decide. And I will tell you this, whatever side you come down on with this, you're in good company, because a lot of people are all over the board on this one. He built also the house of the forest of Lebanon. I tell you, he's a builder. I don't think he can stop now. He built a house of the forest of Lebanon. The length thereof was 100 cubits, the breadth thereof 50 cubits, the height thereof 30 cubits, upon 4 rows of cedar pillars and cedar beams upon the pillars. Well, he had some leftover cedar, right? And he wanted to use it up. Maybe. But there's no overlaid with gold here. We're not told anything of that. Okay? I'm sure it was a nice place. Is it his getaway camp? I don't know. It was covered with cedar above the beams, and lay on 45 pillars, 15 in a row, and there were windows in 3 rows, and light was against light in 3 ranks. Where do we get all this detail about this house in the forest of Lebanon? I have no earthly idea. I struggle with things like this. Okay, Lord, what are you trying to tell us? Is there extra factoids in the Bible? God says, yeah, I want it this thick, this book. I could make it just this thick, but I want it. You know how many writings there are? The book of Jubilees is pretty big. The Bible refers to it, but it's not in the Bible. There are Bible books that the Bible refers to. It quotes from the book of Enoch. The book of Enoch, we have that. It's not in the Bible. In my very humble opinion, nor should it be. I'm not suggesting that anyone's got it wrong, that we need more Bible books. If all the books of antiquity that we know about, the book of Jasher, the book of Gad, these are both mentioned in Scripture, other books as well. If all those books were added to the Bible, it would be a big book. I mean, it would be daunting not to get through it in a year. To get through it in like 5 years, you'd be thinking, oh, I'm almost there. You know, I've only got 17 books left. You know, it would be, why is some things in the Bible and some things, why would, like, okay, he built this. I don't know. I'm going to be honest with you. I can come up and try to buffalo you and tell you, well, it's here because this is very important, this, and try to relate it to something. Sometimes the answer is, I don't know. I know this. I don't think it's extra stuff. And sometimes when I'm looking for wisdom and saying, Lord, you know, what's the deal here? Why do we have this? What are we to make from this? I don't always understand. I don't always get it. I'm sorry, if that offends you or stresses you out, I'm not that bright. I don't know what to say. But I will say this, you know, you read a lot of commentary, and there's a lot of people who throw up their hands like, yep, I'll ask him when I get there. You know what I mean? Like, he made a porch of pillars. The length thereof was 50 cubits. I'm in verse 6. The breadth thereof 30 cubits. The porch was before them, and the other pillars and the thick beam were before them. And he made a porch for the throne where he might judge, even the porch of judgment. It was covered with cedar from one side of the floor to the other, and his house where he dwelt had another court within the porch, which was of the like work. Solomon made also an house for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken a wife, like unto this porch. Now, is this after Shulamite that he marries this one? And is this just a political thing? And how come she's not living in Jerusalem with him? How come she's got her own house? Either he's got her separated out because she's like stunningly beautiful and he doesn't want anyone else ogling her or whatever, or he can't live with her, so she's got her own house. Again, what are you making out of it? I don't know. I know that she's got her own house. Normally, that's a bad sign, okay? I had a friend of mine, he got married, and he'd been married before, and he met this girl, and they kind of had a merger, he said. You know, he had his bedroom, she had her bedroom, they had, you know, he had his bathroom, and she had her bathroom, and, you know, he had his bills that he paid with his, you know, money. She had her bills that she paid with her money. He had his divorce lawyer. She had her. I mean, I know it was common. Next time I saw him, I said, "So how's that working out?" "Yeah, it didn't. That's a great idea." And I thought, like, yeah, who saw that coming there, Captain Obvious? But you don't want to prophesy bad over somebody. Like, you know, next time I see you in a few years, because I see him in a few years, he's from Boston. He comes up here. He works. He bought a house in Stetson. I saw him time. Good enough guy. Interesting to talk to, and again, you know, being from Boston, he talks like I do, and he has some of the same memories, and so we had some, but like, you don't want to sit there and say, yeah, that's disaster waiting to happen, yeah, you're probably going to get divorced, so you don't want to say stuff like that, but you kind of, you see it coming, and then when it happens, it's not, you know, a big surprise. You don't have a merger. You have one flesh, one man, one woman, one holy matrimony for one life. That's the way God designed it. Now, if somebody should happen to pass on and you remarry, that's nobody's... and of course, like the other thing too, is if people are divorced, I don't want to, you know, paint with too broad a brush. You can never get married again for any reason ever. There's a lot of things depending and things like that. And, you know, if people ask me if I will marry them, I want to know the history. I want to know, okay, is this the fourth? Or what happened? And when did you get saved? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, right? Anyway, where are we? Okay, he makes a house for Pharaoh's wife in verse. Pharaoh's daughter, who had taken a wife, like under this porch. Verse 9, all these were of costly stones, according to the measures of huge stones, sawed with saws, within and without, even from the foundation unto the coping, and so was the outside toward the great court. And the foundation was of costly stones, even great stones, stones of 10 cubits and stones of 8 cubits. Above were costly stones, after the measures of huge stones and cedar. So we got all these, what is costly stones? What are the rubies and the sapphires and the emeralds and carbuncles and all that stuff that I don't know that much about, and probably you guys know more about them than I do. Stones doesn't take me where I want to be in life. If somebody bought me a ring and had a ruby on it, I don't know what I'd if it was my birthstone or my wife's birthstone, I don't know what those are. I have to look them up every time if I try to buy her like a, you know, I bought her a ring, had the grandkids' birthstones. I call them mammy ring because she's mammy to the grandkids. But I don't know what their gemstones are. I don't know stuff like that or care. It turned out that they were green and red. They have stones in the month they were born. So, and I gave it to her for Christmas. She thought it was a Christmas ring, you know, it had a green and red stone. I said, I explained it. No, that's Gracie. That's Noah right there, you know. And then it was, but I don't know rocks. It's not, I'm not a stone hound or anything. If I had an emerald mine or a ruby mine, I'd mine them, you know, for sale. I mean, I'd bother to, you know, they could be very costly, but as far as it doesn't do it to me. But this house was beautiful. Okay, there's no lights in the Holy of Holies except for the menorah. Everything's gold-plated and has these gemstones. It would probably blind you. You'd probably have to wear welder's glasses. And then if you go in the Holy of Holies, this is Shekinah glory. You've never seen light like that. I mean, think it all the way through. It's just incredible. Eye candy. And the great court roundabout was three rows of huge stones and a row of cedar beams, both for the inner court of the house of the Lord and for the porch of the house. And King Solomon sent and fetched Hiram out of Tyre. Now, this isn't the Hiram that we met before, the king. This is a Hiram, and he's a craftsman, okay? He was a widow son of the tribe of Naphtali. So he's not Hiram the king. He's a Jewish person. He's of the tribe of Naphtali. And his father was a man of Tyre, a worker in brass, and he was filled with wisdom and understanding, cunning to work all works in brass, and he came to King Solomon and wrought all his work. Do you remember, does anyone remember the name of the two craftsmen in the building of the temple who were named specifically? I think it was Bezalel and Aholibah. Something very close to that, if I'm not exactly correct. So God's saying, I want you to build this magnificent... Now, Solomon's a builder, but he's not a craftsman. He's not like hewing stones all day. He's the king, right? He's got people to do that. And there are some people that are very good at whatever it is. You name it. The tilers, they can tile the best. They can, you know, electricians are the best electricians. You get someone who's a carpenter and he can make incredible, and then you get someone who's like, you know, carpentry, the people who can carve, that's a whole different art form right there. And cabinetry, that's different altogether again. And then you have people who are like, you know, just can do incredible things with stones and, And then he comes, brings this guy with supernatural ability. This guy's like, he's one in a million. We even know his name. He came to King Solomon and wrought all his work. For he cast two pillars of brass of 18 cubits high apiece. Okay? What's 18 cubits now? That's 27 feet, right? I think that's the front row plus into the, like, the beginning of that row right there, the beginning of that row was probably about 27 plus or minus a little bit, okay? They're two pillars. They don't hold up anything, by the way. He cast them, so, and by the way, this is down by the Dead Sea we're going to find. He cast two pillars of brass, 18 cubits high apiece, and a line of 12 cubits did compass either of them. So that's how much around a line of, did compass them, okay, did encompass, go around them. And he made two chapiters of molten brass to set upon the tops of the pillars. The height of the one chapiter was 5 cubits. The height of the other chapiter was 5 cubits. And nets of checker work and wreaths of chain work for the chapiters were upon the tops of the pillars. So this is all decorative, 7 for the one chapiter and 7 for the other chapiter. Or capitals, when I say chapiter, like a capital, like you think of like the Capitol building, the dome on top. And he made the pillars and two rows round about the one network to cover the chapiter that were upon the top with pomegranates. So he did for the other chapiter. And the chapiters that were upon the top of the pillars were of lily work in the porch, 4 cubits, and the chapiters upon the two pillars had pomegranates also above, over against the belly, which was by the network, and the pomegranates were 200 in rows round about upon the other chapiter. And he set up the pillars in the porch of the temple. He set up the right pillar and called the name thereof Jachin. It's Jachin. And he set up the left pillar and he called the name thereof Boaz, after his great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather. I might be losing count there. Okay? What's Jachin and Boaz mean? To establish, and I'm giving you in the order that they appear, to establish and to strengthen. That's the mission. Our mission, AB Church's mission, to establish and to strengthen. So we had that, there's a a little plaque on his church before you walk in. It says Boaz, and the other one says in English. So it looks like it says Jake, and it's Yakin. That's how you pronounce it. No J sound. We know that. And because we had nursery over there, we had like the little kids were over there at one point, and we wanted to establish and to strengthen. That was the mission. That's what our plan was. Remember nursery was like, we had a dozen kids. It was crazy good. I'd like to see those days come back. So we have two pillars that aren't holding up anything, decorative in nature. Some said these were giant lamps that illumined the whole roundabout. I think that's correct. I think that's correct, by the way. They would illumine the whole environs. Does it remind anybody of anything? No? I think of two pillars. I think the pillar of fire by night and the pillar of fire by pillar of cloud by day. It reminds me of that. Is there a connection there? I don't know. You know, you can connect any dots you want in Scripture. Some fit and some don't. But the whole thing is about, it's the temple of God. It's God's dwelling place. Now, God really isn't. Was he present there? Yeah, but he's present everywhere. Was his present manifest there? Yes. Yes. So when he was there, was he only there? I don't want to say anything silly like that. But for purposes, this was his house. We got Yakin and Boaz at verse 22. Upon the top of the pillar was lily work, so was the work of the pillars finished. He made a molten sea, 10 cubits from the one brim to the other. It was round all about, and its height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits to encompass it round about. A molten sea. It was a labor. They washed, the priests washed. I think, did they wash the sacrifices in it? I don't think so. It would be pretty gross and you wouldn't want to clean yourself. It's hard to say. On the brim of it, round about, there were knops compassing it, 10 in a cubit, compassing the sea round about. The knops were cast in two rows when it was cast. Again, this is cast work, right? Cast, like they built, they took this big and they dug out in the sand, in the clay, the shape of it, and poured molten metal in it. That's what it means when it talks about cast. That's how they did those big those pillars. Verse 25, it stood upon 12 oxen, this sea, this pool, this bath, this labor, as if it were, if it stood upon 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north, north, 3 looking toward the west, 3 looking toward the south, 3 looking toward the east. And the sea was set about above upon them, and all their hinder parts were inward. So they're facing on these four cardinal directions. And it was a handbreadth thick, and the brim thereof was wrought like the brim of a cup with flowers of lilies. It contained 2,000 baths. That's 17,000 gallons, by the way. He made so it's big. He made 10 bases of brass. 4 cubits was the length of one base, and 4 cubits the breadth thereof, and 3 cubits the height of it. Excuse me. And the work of the bases was upon this manner. They had borders, and the borders were between the ledges, and the borders that were between the ledges were lions, oxen, and cherubim. And upon the ledges there was a base above, and beneath the lions and oxen were certain additions made of thin work. So we have lions and we have oxen. Those are two of the, you remember the cherubim is given to us both in the book of Ezekiel and in the book of the Revelation. You know, you see the cherubim, they have four faces. One was the face of an ox, one was the face of a man, one was the face of a lion, and one was the face of an eagle. We get the lion here and we have the ox. So where are the others? I didn't design it. I don't know. And every vase had four brazen wheels and plates of brass, and the four corners thereof had undersetters. Upon the label were undersetters molten at the side of every addition. Undersetters, there were probably axles. And I'm not exactly sure. In the mouth of it within the chapiter was a cubit, but the mouth thereof was round after the work of the base, a cubit and a half. And also upon the mouth of it were gravings with their borders four square, not round. Okay. And under the borders were four wheels, and the axle trees of the wheels were joined to the base, and the height of a wheel was a cubit and a half a cubit. And the work of the wheels was like the work of a chariot wheel. Their axle trees and their naves and their fellows and their spokes were all molten. And there were four undersetters of the four corners of the one base, and the other setters, undersetters were of the very base itself. And in the top of the base was there a round compass of half a cubit high, and the top of the base of the ledges thereof and the borders thereof were of the same. Verse 36, for on the plates of the ledges thereof and on the borders thereof he graved cherubims, lions, and palm trees according to the proportion of every one in additions round about. After this manner he made the ten bases of all of them had one casting, one measure, and one size. Then he made 10 lavers of brass. One laver contained 40 baths, and every laver had four cubits, was four cubits, and upon every one of the 10 bases, one laver. The 40 baths are about 340 gallons. So we're talking about a lot. By the way, there's no running water on top of the Temple Mount. Everything has to be brought up by hand. I don't know. They put some sort of aqueduct system in. Seemed like they'd almost have to. I don't know. And he put five bases, and by the way, the only natural water in Jerusalem is the Gihon spring. There's no river. Like, you know, most major cities in the world, London, Paris, New York, you get the Hudson River. You know, you get the Seine, you got the, London? The Thames, you're right. So every great cities, they're all built on rivers, so commerce can get to them and stuff like that. Jerusalem, no river, nope. Just in case you're wondering, the Jerusalem River, nope. So he put five bases on the right side of the house and five on the left side of the house, and he set the sea on the right side of the house eastward over against the south. And Hiram made the lavers and his shovels and the basin. So Hiram made an end of doing all the work that he made King Solomon for the house of the Lord. The two pillars and the two bowls of the chapiters that were on the top of the two pillars and the two networks to cover the two bowls of the chapiters were upon the top of the pillars. And 400 pomegranates for the two networks, even two rows of pomegranates for one network to cover the two bowls of the chapiters that were upon the pillars and the 10 bases and 10 lavers on the bases. You got it? I know this is dizzying. You can either conceptualize this or you cannot. Some people just have this, and I say this in their mind, they understand, they go, oh, wow, this is incredible. I could go and talk to this in painful detail, but at the end of it, I'm not sure you're going to be, you're nonplussed, because it looks opulent, amazing, and incredible, and we have great detail. Why do we have this detail? We're not building this again. It was ruined, and it's not going to be built anytime soon. So why all this amazing detail? I'll talk about that in a minute. And the 10 bases and 10 lavers on the bases, the one sea and 12 oxen under the sea, and the pots and the shovels and the basins and all the vessels which Hiram made to King Solomon for the house of the Lord were of bright brass. In the plain of Jordan did the king cast them, in the clay ground between Succoth and Zarethan. That's down by the Dead Sea, Succoth and Zarethan. So Solomon left all the vessels unweighed because they were exceeding many. Neither was the weight of the brass found out. We didn't even measure the stuff. It weighed so much that we didn't even weigh it. And Solomon and all the vessels that pertained unto the house of the Lord, the altar of gold, the table of gold, whereupon the showbread was. Now this is what we found from before, from the tabernacle. This comes into the, but it's all new. So he took the old tabernacle stuff, the table of showbread, and he put it in the, no, it looks like they're refashioned, right? I don't know. Solomon made all the vessels that pertain unto the house of the Lord, the altar of gold, the table of gold, whereupon the showbread was, and the candlesticks of pure gold, that's the menorah, on the right side, and five candlesticks of pure gold, five on the right side and five on the left, before the oracle, with the flowers and the lamps and the tongs of gold. So we have 10 menorahs instead of one. We have five on each side leading into the oracle, the Holy of Holies. It's how I read it, okay? Now, they're saying, like, they're 6 feet tall. When they put these together today, and they have these, the gold, it weighs so much it will droop. They had to, like, reinforce it with, like, steel rod, and then put the gold over that to, because it wouldn't. And these, by the way, it says candlesticks. You know they're not candles, right? You know they're not wax. They're lampstands. They burned oil. They didn't burn. And by the way, wax is the wrong metaphor, right? Because it's consumed as it burns. These just give light, and they don't. And the light is by oil, which is a symbol of the Holy Spirit. So they're not like consumed as they go. They're forever. You know what I mean? Have you found one of these today? I mean, the original ones of antiquity. What would that be worth? That it boggles the mind. The candlesticks of pure gold. That means the whole thing was made of gold. Five on the right side, five on the left, before the oracle, and the flowers and the lamps and the tongs of gold, and the bowls and the snuffers and the basins and the spoons, and the censers of pure gold, and the hinges of gold, both for the doors of the inner house and most holy place, and for the doors of the house, to wit, of the temple. So was ended all the work that King Solomon made for the house of the Lord. And Solomon brought in the things which David his father had dedicated, even the silver and the gold and the vessels, did he put among the treasures of the house of the Lord. So everything's there, ready to go. Why? Why do we have this? So much detail. Now, if he's given it to the builders to build, here's the blueprints. It's not enough information, okay? You know, we got this network, and they got two rows of pomegranates. I get this. You know, draw me a picture. Show me what. And so the blueprints would be a lot more information. So we're kind of hitting the highlights, and we're like, okay, it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. It's never going to be built again. Not this, right? They built another one. It was kind of a scaled-down model when they came back from captivity. That's chronicled in the books of Nehemiah and Ezra, right? But why do we have all this? It was kind of a once. Solomon did, and was it the temple that Jesus visited? When Jesus went to Jerusalem to go to the temple, was it this temple that Solomon built? Nebuchadnezzar destroyed it hundreds of years before Jesus Christ. I want to say like 701 BC or something like that. The destruction of the temple isn't a highlight in my life, so I know that date, and then I don't know it, okay? I always forget. But hundreds of years before Christ, Jesus never saw this temple. Now, they came back out of captivity, they built the temple. That Herod rebuilt, okay? They call it Herod's temple, the second temple. It was more glorious than the first temple. Why? Because that's the one that Jesus showed up at. Now that was destroyed in 60 AD. We don't know anything about the chapiters and the brass and the networks and the walls and the pertaining to the... We don't know any of that. I mean, not a lot. We're given kind of a skinny little rundown in the book. It tells us a little bit about it in Ezra, something about it, but not much. This is, okay, now in the kingdom age, thousand-year millennial reign of Christ, there'll be a temple. Incredible. I mean, just incredible. A lot of details given there in the book of Ezekiel. There'll be another temple. That won't be worth talking about. That's something for the Antichrist to defile. The abomination that causes desolation. But here is the temple. And here's a lot of detail. Why? Now, what we say before was the temple symbolic of us. A lot of detail. A lot of craftsmanship, a lot of caring. Willy-nilly just throw it up in a... Oh, no. No. I bet the craftsmen had to take a bath before they get to work on the temple every day. I bet there was prayers and they had to go through... They couldn't do much ritual because the temple wasn't built yet. But, I mean, to think about, you know, think about it. Lots and lots and lots of detail. Does God know how many hairs you have on your head? I'm telling you, He does. The Scripture tells us that. Jesus thinks that. And then, of course, we can go on with freckles or fingerprints. Could Jesus trace out your fingerprint? Could he draw a picture of your fingerprints and get it right every time? Yeah, of course He could. Does He know you on a cellular level? Yeah. There's great detail. You're not just thrown together. You're not like an afterthought. Like, all right, you're saved. I feel good today. Oh, what, you want Him to be saved? All right, whatever. Okay. And He adds us, because that's how, you know, whatever. And God saves you. That's kind of a whatever. And He forgets about you. Wait, did I save you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, now I remember. No. I think He's given us a hint. Unless the Lord builds the house, right? Where's the house? I don't know. I read all this and I'm kind of nonplussed. I'm not going to build this. I'm not even going to build a model of this. It doesn't fascinate me. But I think it's a picture of fascinates me, quite a bit, as a matter of fact. That's all I have. I think, like, this is here. It's got to be here for a reason. What, are you showing us, like, this is what He gave to Solomon. It's a house. That's earmarked for destruction. Are you earmarked for destruction? Nope. If I read... John chapter 11, right, you're never going to be destroyed. You're never going to die. He's the resurrection and the life. Does He care about us? Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes. So He gives us these chapters on this, and it's just, at the end of the day, it's a gold building, and it's a slaughterhouse, and it's symbolic of the place where God dwells, where people come to meet with Him, but they've got to meet with Him on a certain basis. What's the basis? Blood. Blood sacrifice. Because we're in a particular situation, we're separated by sin. So we meet Him in the Holy of Holies, not without the blood, but it's not our blood. It's not a blood of a bull or a goat. We have to understand that could never really remove sin. The blood is His own dear Son's blood, and that's the basis. But at some point, this building, you know, in 32 AD, He took the hanging that was separating, the curtain that was separating the holy place from the most holy place. It was just a curtain. And He took that and He ripped it right in half when Jesus died. Not coincidentally, there's no facts in Scripture that are there by just random. I don't know them all, But there's nothing that's random. So what is he saying? He's saying, okay, that you know how the high priest had to go in there once a year? That's done. Now, the high priest lives with me. I've accepted his blood. There's nothing between us anymore. And if we didn't get that, he took the whole building and leveled it in 70 AD. Now what are you going to do? You have to come to me by faith. We don't do that anymore. We don't. Every week you come to church, no one ever came with a lamb or two turtle doves or a goat. Here, sacrifice. I had a bad week, Adam. Will you sacrifice this? No, I wouldn't. Oh, you want to do butcher and have like lamb chops? Well, I can get into that. But no, as far as like the pay fees, no. It's all been done. You think about the temple, and it's a picture of you and me, I think, on one level, and the other, it's a place where it was a slaughterhouse. I don't know how else to say it. It's a place where animals were sacrificed to God. And we don't have one on earth anymore. Now, in a short period of time, I would say well within 50 years, there's going to be a temple. It's the one the Antichrist is going to desecrate. Might be only 5 years or less away. I don't know. Why? Because they didn't understand the message. The simple things we're talking about now that a 7-year-old know. And they're going to go back to animal sacrifice to try to get in good with God. And God won't have it. It's something the Antichrist is going to come and desecrate, like I say. Anyway, so enough on temples.